Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 15,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty, staff professionals, and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges, advocates for quality higher education for all Floridians, online at myuff.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
People such as fraternity pledges keep dying in Florida despite tough anti-hazing laws, so the legislature may be kicking the prohibitions up a notch.
Andrew Coffey would probably be alive today if somebody had called 911 at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Also tonight, Florida has no real sanctuary cities, but that's not halting the drive in the Florida legislature to make them against the law anyway.
This is meant to have bad criminal illegal aliens that are getting out of the judicial system and making sure that they are detained.
We'll also follow the debate over whether a bill to ban fracking bans all fracking in Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan. We're at the start of week two of Florida's 2019 lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. The 2017 death of a Florida State University fraternity pledge is prompting state lawmakers to consider a change in the state's hazing law. Spearheading the effort are the parents of Andrew Coffey, along with Democratic State Senator Lauren Book. Lynn Hatter has that story.
Andrew Coffey was attending an off-campus fraternity party when he drank an entire bottle of vodka that had been taped to his hand. His blood alcohol level was nearly four times the legal limit, and when he passed out, he was carried to a futon and left alone. Partygoers said they believed he was sleeping it off. According to a grand jury, there was an 11-minute delay between an attempt to wake Coffey the next morning and calls to 911. During that time, five fraternity members exchanged text messages and phone calls. The report says fraternity members were, quote, more concerned about getting in trouble than they were about trying to save Coffey's life.
Andrew Coffey would probably be alive today if somebody had called 911 at 3 o'clock in the morning.
David Bianchi is the attorney for Tom and Sandy Coffey, Andrew's parents. The grand jury noted a lack of cooperation from those attending the party, and it was especially critical of the FSU chapter of Pi Kappa Phi, the fraternity Coffey was pledging. Police interviewed 22 of his fellow pledges, along with 16 members. Most refused to answer questions, and only two of the fraternity's leaders agreed to speak with investigators. Seven others refused. A measure before the Senate's Criminal Justice Committee would grant immunity to the first person who calls 911 and agrees to work with law enforcement.
We and 15 other families in the country belong to a club that we don't want any more members to. All their sons have died in hazing to a pledge, a fraternity. And we'd never want to see this happen again.
Andrew Coffey's father, Tom, addressed the committee Monday. Nine members of the fraternity were eventually charged with felonies, but those were later reduced to misdemeanors as the state struggled with proving the students actively participated in hazing Coffey. Tom and Sandy Coffey are supporting Democratic Senator Lauren Book's bill to expand the state's hazing law. The measure allows an organization's leaders to be prosecuted for hazing if they encourage others to commit the act or are involved in the planning of the activity. Here's Tom Coffey.
And we'd never want to see this happen again. So we think this amendment to the statute, of hazing statute, will enhance it and put people on notice that they can't just do what they do without any kind of consequences.
Less than a year after Andrew Coffey's death, Florida State University faced a second hazing incident. A member of a suspended fraternity sustained a head injury after being punched in the face during a scumbag of the week activity. Book's bill would also extend state hazing laws to former fraternity members.
This could have been prevented, and that's what this is trying to do. And this would keep us in line with several other states, actually, that have similar statutes. Florida is one of 10 that don't. And so it's time that we keep ourselves up with how we can keep kids safe.
State lawmakers are concerned about offering immunity to just one person who reports a hazing case, but Bianchi says that's up to the discretion of state prosecutors. Florida's hazing law is called the Chad Meredith Act. It's named after a former University of Miami student who died in 2001 after trying to swim across Lake Osceola while drunk. He had been hoping to join a fraternity. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
A bill that looks to prevent the creation of sanctuary cities for undocumented immigrants in Florida makes a key committee stop on Tuesday. Ryan Daly reports a coalition of House and Senate Democrats says they'll fight tooth and nail to stop it from passing.
Republican Senator Joe Gruter says his bill, which also has a House companion, is about following the rule of law.
This bill has nothing to do with immigration policy itself. It's just making sure that local governments cooperate with federal immigration authorities and laws. And what it really comes down to is Florida doesn't have a definition of what a sanctuary jurisdiction is.
Gruter says the measure puts in place that definition and prevents local officials and law enforcement from blocking cooperation with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE.
So right now there's 29 counties that have agreements, the basic operating agreements with ICE right now, to make sure this cooperation takes place. Basically what happens is, in our bill specifically, we're not dealing, listen, if you're an illegal alien and you're here and you're obeying the laws, you're being a good member of the community, working hard, kids in school, you have nothing to worry about regarding this bill. This bill only comes into play is if you're in the judicial process, if you get arrested, if you get processed.
The Sarasota Republican insists that means only people committing crimes who represent a threat to society will be ensnared.
This is meant to have bad criminal illegal aliens that are getting out of the judicial system and making sure that they are detained if there's a detainer request, and making sure that we eliminate these bad elements from our society.
My dad works at an airport, and sometimes he works during late hours of the night, and has already been stopped twice by the police and found driving without a license. One more stop and it could become a felony, which could lead to deportation.
Natalie Chalco is a Peruvian recipient of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals policy that exempts her from deportation. But her parents aren't, and that means she fears even driving the length of the state is a risk.
The drive from South Florida up to Tallahassee is a long and dangerous one for undocumented folks, especially for those who don't have a license. So when the day came for me to go to college, I had to do it alone. It was far too big of a risk for my mom and dad to drive 8 hours through this huge state.
Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith says the immigration agency's requests for local officials' cooperation represent a violation of constitutional rights.
These are unconstitutional documents, not because I've called them so, but because court ruling after court ruling has said over and over and over again, ICE detainer requests are unconstitutional documents.
The Orlando Democrat says he fears Gruter's bill would increase deportation of Venezuelans back to a home country in political and economic turmoil. He says 2018 saw a 35% increase in deportations of Venezuelan people.
Senate Bill 168 will escalate mass deportations across the board, but it will also escalate the deportation of Venezuelan immigrants who may be sent back to their country to be slaughtered by the Maduro regime.
Meanwhile, Senator Annette Tadeo says the bill would deter undocumented immigrants from reporting crimes and abuse, and even driving their children to college. In her opinion, it's all political.
The fact is, we don't have not even one sanctuary city in Florida. And what we are creating with this bill, unfortunately, on political terms, a lot of parties like to get credit and get some points.
And Senator Javier Rodriguez of Miami agrees. And he says proponents of the bill are engaged in fear-mongering.
And why? Why does this bill create the the phantom of sanctuary cities. Frankly, it's to keep the issue of immigration alive. It is for political purposes.
The measure will be heard in the Senate Infrastructure and Security Committee Tuesday afternoon. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a plan to ban fracking passed a key committee, but environmental advocates aren't happy.
I thought we were on the same page, but when you don't include all different forms of fracking, it's not doing everything it should be doing.
Florida female attorneys convene at the Capitol, and one issue among many is dealing with kids who need legal help.
And we're even going to structure it so that you can treat them like a client, and we will transport them to your office if you'd like to schedule an appointment.
The Democrat who unsuccessfully ran for Florida governor back in November has by no means quietly retired from the political scene.
More than 4 million of you decided that you wanted a different direction for the state of Florida. We want you to know that we see you, that we hear you.
And botched plastic surgeries are too common. And with Miami being known as a hotspot for plastic surgeries, Miami Republican Senator Anatiri Flores is trying to prevent any more mistakes that can sometimes result in death.
They're coming here expecting that they're going to get something good done, it's going to be easy, and what they can't imagine happens is that their mom, their grandmother, their daughter isn't going to come home.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
The Florida Senate is one step closer to approving a ban on fracking, but the bill that left the committee looks dramatically different than environmental advocates had hoped. Sean Mulcahy has more.
The Senate Agriculture Committee narrowly advanced a controversial measure that would ban fracking. That's something environmental groups like Floridians Against Fracking have been pushing for years now, but many still aren't happy with the bill because of what's not in it. Here's Floridians Against Fracking's Ryan Lee.
We do feel that the fracking ban bill does need to be amended to ban matrix acidizing and that the other issues covered in this amendment don't do that.
Matrix acidizing is a process used to dissolve rock and extract oil and natural gas. It happens at a lower pressure than hydraulic fracturing. That's the most common fracking practice. The bill passed 3-2 on party lines. Boca Raton Democratic Senator Kevin Rader is one of the no votes.
For many years that I've been coming up here, the governors have always been enormously opposed to offshore drilling. But when it comes to fracking, you know, I thought we were on the same page. But when you don't include all different forms of fracking, which includes matrix acidizing in the definition, well, then it's not doing everything it should be doing.
Language authorizing oil drilling in the Everglades also found its way into the bill. That's courtesy of an amendment by Bartow Republican Senator Ben Albritton. He's the committee's chairman. It largely codifies administrative rules set by the State Department of Environmental Protection into law and adds new restrictions on obtaining a permit. Albritton says it's a done deal, citing a recent ruling by the First District Court of Appeal allowing oil drilling in the Everglades. This amendment would make it safer, he says.
The impacts of this amendment would be that the above-ground portions of that operation would be exposed to greater cost, exposed to greater restrictions, and essentially the goal here, this all was very organic, the goal here would be that it would increase the safety of the above-ground portions of that operation.
Albritton also offered an amendment that would ban companies from pumping fracking waste into wells that received praise from environmentalists like Florida Food and Water Watch. Only one amendment failed. Pensacola Republican Senator Doug Broxson's proposal would have banned using acid in any Florida well, either oil or water. This alarmed an unlikely coalition of activists, the Florida Petroleum Council, Florida Food and Water Watch, and the Sierra Club of Florida. Broxson, clearly dismayed over the opposition, withdrew his amendment.
Mr. Chairman, the effort of this amendment is to create an even playing field. We've had so much rhetoric, so much information that's been given in this committee, some of it certainly not accurate, but we have a test tube called J Florida. It's been working for 50 years. And to make the kind of accusations that's been made in this committee is really offensive.
The committee voted and adjourned 20 minutes before its scheduled end at the behest of Chairman Albritton. This upset the committee's Democrats and dozens of activists who lined up to speak on the issue. The Florida Democratic Party is calling the bill a sham and says Republicans should be ashamed for, quote, betraying Florida's bipartisan tradition of protecting the environment. Florida Food and Water Watch said in a statement it's, quote, appalling lawmakers chose not to include matrix acidizing in the ban. A similar fracking ban filed by Tallahassee Democratic Senator Bill Momford includes the prohibition on matrix acidizing. It got the nod from the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, but it will likely die in committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy.
The Florida House is weighing funding for building projects at public universities across the state. While these meetings happen every year, Casey Chapter tells us they're under more scrutiny now.
Higher education spending is a concern of House Speaker Jose Oliva, who says he wants to cut back on appropriations to higher education. The concern arises after scandals with Florida public universities. Most notably, the University of Central Florida, which improperly spent $38 million in state funding on the construction of the Trevor Colborne Hall.
I think that we can create a stronger, better, more viable university system without just throwing more money at it. The carryovers of these universities are over $1 billion. Sometimes they don't even know how to spend the money. We throw so much of it at them.
During Monday's appropriations hearing, representatives peppered university presenters with questions about the numbers behind the projects and how the buildings would benefit the universities.
How many buildings on your campus are these services currently housing?
The faculty, the staff that you have, do they draw any federal funding now for research?
What will that bring you to as a percentage? But more importantly, what will that bring you to overall, and how much more do you need?
That's Tallahassee Democratic Representatives Robinson, Gregory, and Newton. Representative Ramon Alexander said legislators are trying to be more cautious with appropriating funds.
We have to come up with smart and effective ways to make sure that when the state makes an investment, the institutions are able to complete those projects in a timely manner and subsequently fulfill their strategic missions and focuses as institutions.
During the hearing, he backed Florida A&M University's request to finish building a student success center, which lawmakers authorized 2 years ago.
It is a critical need, and I hope the committee fully understands that there's a significant reason why Florida A&M University has had this as their number one priority over the last 5 years, and it's a very critical, important project towards FAMU being able to compete.
Senate budget leaders have said they are not interested in overhauling university spending. The News Service of Florida reported Appropriations Committee Chairwoman Kelly Stargill said there is no urgent need for change. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Casey Chapter.
The Florida Association of Women Lawyers, otherwise known as FAWL, is holding its annual lobby days in Tallahassee. Members are hearing from policymakers, visiting lawmakers, and they're also looking to expand their good works. As the first full week of the legislative session got underway, FAWL members heard from Attorney General Ashley Moody, Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Freed, Department of Juvenile Justice Secretary Simone Marsteller, and Senate Minority Leader Audrey Gibson. They also got briefed on the bills they're backing from subject matter experts. For example, Guardian Ad Litem Executive Director Alan Abramowitz went over House Bill 421. It expedites the process of finding permanent homes for abused and neglected kids. And he says lawmakers want to know why children are spending so long in foster care.
And there's good reasons sometimes. I mean, every case is so unique, you can't generalize. But children really shouldn't languish in foster care. A year is a long time in the life of a child. We've accepted that.
Guardian Ad Litem's Director of Appeals, Thomasina Moore, is also a member of FAWL. And she explained the upcoming partnership between the two groups that will involve attorneys volunteering 1 hour per month to advise youths who are close to aging out of foster care.
Just to be able to talk to them, answer their questions, maybe live questions, maybe legal questions, a real mentoring initiative. And we're even going to structure it so that you can treat them like a client, and we will transport them to your office. If you'd like to schedule an appointment that meets your schedule, we'll bring them there to you.
The mentoring partnership kicks off next month. Meanwhile, House Bill 421 has cleared one committee and faces two more. Its Senate companion, which is Senate Bill 262, has cleared three committees and it's poised for a floor hearing. Former Tallahassee mayor and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum has an announcement coming up later this month. Gabrielle Bolden reports.
The way democracy works is that you have to have the fierce urgency of this moment.
Last Friday, the former political candidate teased an announcement with a promo video. That night, Gillum released a website, bringithomeflorida.org, at the South by Southwest Conference with NBA star Chris Bosh in attendance.
Only one reason I'm here tonight, and that is to do everything within my own personal power to flip this nation blue in 2020.
Gillum was hoping to become the first Black governor of Florida and return the state leadership to the Democratic Party. However, that ended in November when he lost against Ron DeSantis. Gillum says he knows the experience of running all too well.
I spent 2 years of my life running all around the state of Florida, trying to do everything within my power to wrest away power that Democrats haven't had for 24 years.
Thank you!
24 years. And I won't bury the lead. I ran for governor and I didn't win in my consolation.
Gillum ended up winning the race twice following the recount.
We know that this fight continues. In spite of the outcome of this election, RJ and I are committing ourselves alongside each and every one of you. More than 4 million of you decided that you wanted a different direction for the state of Florida. We want you to know that we see you, that we hear you.
Since his loss, Gillum has made headlines by becoming a political commentator for CNN and a visiting fellow for the Institute of Politics at Harvard. Now he's planning his next move, but he won't say what he plans to announce on March 20th in Miami. He's currently selling tickets to the event on bringithomeflorida.org website, which is an echo of his campaign mantra. The site is being paid for by Bring It Home Florida Incorporated, a nonprofit organization that was established January 31st. The promo video was paid for his PAC, Forward Florida. For WFSU News, I'm Gabrielle Bolden.
Well, tomorrow's Tuesday, and there's a full day schedule at the state capitol, as we hear from Gina Jordan.
Here's a look at bills being heard tomorrow in the Florida legislature. In the House, anyone who seeks medical help for himself or for someone else experiencing an alcohol or drug overdose would be shielded from legal action. The definition of cyberstalking may be expanded to include accessing or attempting to access the online accounts or internet-connected home electronic systems of another person without permission. Private parties that want to collect, use, and maintain anyone's biometric identifying information would be subject to certain requirements and restrictions. A standard of care is proposed for telehealth providers to perform patient evaluations and prescribe controlled substances. In the Senate, legislation would require a specified annual appropriation to the Florida Forever Trust Fund. Owners and operators of public lodging, like hotels and timeshares, may have to implement human trafficking awareness training and policies for certain employees. The bill also creates the Soliciting for Prostitution Registry, requiring certain criminal history records to be included in the registry. Counties may have to come up with a plan to implement a text to 911 system. And in turn, the state would have to develop a plan to require that emergency dispatchers be able to transfer an emergency call from one E911 system to another. Should district school board members be term limited? A proposal suggests they should, and the requirement should be in the state constitution. That's some of what's happening tomorrow at the Capitol. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, plastic surgery has become more and more common, and some believe it enhances a person's looks. But like most surgeries, not every one of them ends up going as planned. In some situations, it can even result in death. Blaise Ganey reports that Miami Republican Senator Ana Thierry Flores presented a bill today that she believes will save lives.
Jasmine Smith, Heather Meadows, and Kizzy London are just some of the names mentioned by Senator Ana Thierry Flores
as victims of botched elective plastic surgeries.
So what all these victims have in common, what do all these people have in common, is that they came to Florida for something that should have been simple, something that should have left them feeling better about themselves, but they were never able to go back home because they died.
The victims she named were not Florida residents, but came from other states to receive elective plastic surgery in Miami.
This isn't just a Miami problem, and this isn't just a Florida problem. I mention all those names so that you can see that this is really a national problem. And since filing this bill, we've had an outpouring of people, victims, attorneys, doctors from across the country who have reached out to us from Missouri to West Virginia to South Florida, talking about either how they've been victims, their family have been victims, or their patients have been victims.
Flores is proposing multiple changes to the regulations an office must follow in order to perform elective plastic surgeries in their facilities.
So we know that we can't change all the bad actors. Those who will be motivated by money rather than safety, they'll never be completely stopped. But we can give the Department of Health the tools that they need to shut down these butcher shops, because that's really what they are.
The change would require Florida's Department of Health to impose standards and regulate facilities that perform cosmetic surgeries the same as they do surgical centers. The facility, as well as the doctor, would have to show financial responsibility to pay claims when they are at fault. And DOH would be able to suspend registration of a facility who is not in compliance with the standards.
That's particularly important because what we found is that many of these clinics, someone will die at one of their clinics. And the next day, they'll open back up, take new patients as if nothing happens.
The proposal also gives the state the discretion to put a 5-year ban on a facility or physician whose license has been revoked, making sure they can't open a new center under another name. Flora says she knows the bill doesn't fix everything, but she hopes that DOH and the Board of Medicine can create rules to specify training requirements for certified office surgery center healthcare practitioners and other healthcare practitioners who are not regulated by a board. The bill passed unanimously, and an identical bill in the House has not yet been heard. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Blaze Ganey.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Gabrielle Bolden. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. You can hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 15,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges, working to encourage lawmakers to fund Florida's future through support of public education, online at myuff.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.